Yes.
Recordings have started.
Thank you very much. Anyone else on audio only at this point? Okay, so are there any updates to statements of interest in the group? Okay, so just a quick word of introduction, first of all, to on behalf of everyone in the group, members and participants, wish a speedy and efficient recovery to Caboose, who's just mentioned that he's had an unfortunate accident and will probably have trouble using the chat during this call. Caboose, we are, I don't know if it's a good sign or whether it's a sign of some potential of your dedication of being on this call despite your condition. But we really wish you with all our hearts that a speedy recovery. I think we wouldn't be here at this point without your contribution, so we would definitely not like to hear that it would prevent you from attending our next meetings, for instance. So get well soon. Now, turning to the agenda for the meeting today, we have a couple of administration points that should be pretty fast and quick, because we have some interesting, substantial first and second readings on our plate today, and so we'll try to get on with this as quickly as possible, because there's a lot of discussions we need to have. We're making good progress, and I'm confident that by the end of this call, we'll be even one step closer to going out for public comment on several of our items. Maybe to start with the administration items on the next slide. We have the public consultation underway for the IRP rules of procedures. A reminder that the deadline has been extended to January the 25th. Some public debate has started, and we have three commenters so far. So we encourage everyone to liaise with their respective groups to encourage participation in this public consultation. Second item is an update on the travel funding. That would probably be best handled by Bernie or someone from staff, if you can. We lost Bernie. No, Bernie's back. So while we get Bernie or someone from staff back on to give us a quick update on the travel funding, a reminder that our Facebook
is in
Copenhagen. Okay, I'll talk to you in a moment, Bernie. Thanks. A reminder that our face-to-face is on the Friday, March the 10th. And if you haven't managed to get your visa at this point, please do so as soon as possible. This is a usual reminder, but it's always unfortunate that people cannot attend because of visa issues. That may happen, but if it's because we've been too late, that's very unfortunate. So, Bernie, on to you for the update on travel funding and administration.
Thank you. As you will remember, for ICANN 58 Copenhagen, we had two phases. The first phase completed before the break. The second phase concluded Sunday midnight UTC last week. We had one more application from Ed Morris. The co-chairs reviewed it and approved it. We forwarded that to ICANN Travel, and that is all underway. A slight addition to the agenda, the PCST has published the financial results for Workstream 2 for November, which includes the advanced estimates for Hyderabad travel, and everything seems to be good. It should be in your email box. Thank you very much. That's my report for the moment.
Thank you very much, Bernie. I see a hand raised by Carlos.
Good evening, okay, everybody. I request Bernie that Arjan kindly help me because I don't want to be in two different hotels. The first one is for CCWG, and after that I move another one. Although I take all responsibility to pay for the rest of the meetings, but I would like that I can make every effort that I stay in the same hotel that I would be for CCWG. In particular, I may have problems with the hands that now it is to be operated tomorrow, so I don't want to have such a movement. Maybe I can help me kindly to have one single hotel for the entire period while I pay the rest of the mission myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavus, and as usual, I can tackle you everything to Debrez to accommodate every request, and I suggest you liaise with them on that. Bernie, anything else on this update?
No, sir.
Excellent. So we're moving to the legal committee update, and I think Leon Sanchez's call dropped.
I'm back.
Oh, you're back. So over to you, Leon, for the legal committee update.
Thank you very much, Matthew. This is Leon Sanchez. And well, the legal committee has no pending requests. All the questions that have been submitted for assessment and assignment to the legal committee have been duly replied or answered by the incumbent people that need to provide answers to all the questions. But I would like to recommend that the different subgroups take advantage of the legal advice already gotten from the other subgroups. Like, for example, I see that there is a discussion going on in the jurisdiction subgroup that could very much use the definition on applicable law that was provided to the human rights group. And I think that that would be an excellent use of the legal advice that has been provided to other subgroups. So I would definitely encourage the different subgroups to take a look at the advice that we have received already in other subgroups to see which of those answers might already fill in some of the concerns or some of the definitions that you might be looking for in your own subgroups. So that would be, of course, my recommendation. And I see that Kavus' hand is up. So, Kavus, could you please take the floor?
Yes. First of all, happy New Year, Leon. You raised the issue of the applicable law, and I would like to bring to the attention or kind attention for all distinguished colleagues that I have no problem with applicable law in the human rights, but because we have applicable law also in the subgroup dealing with jurisdiction, I proposed to you all three coaches a small footnote to address the issue, and I kindly ask you to raise it when the report of yields come up. It is a simple reminder. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavus. Your sound was very muffled to me, so I'm not sure if I got the idea well, but are you suggesting that the human rights group definition is dependent on the jurisdiction subgroup's definition?
Yes, I don't want to make it so much upfront. I propose a footnote adding an asterisk above the applicable law and the text of the footnote that I send you to you all would be as follows. That would be pending or based on the results of activities of subgroup on the jurisdiction, the term applicable law may require to be reviewed and, if necessary, revised. As simple as that. I don't want to change anything. I respect what we have agreed on the first reading. I don't want to come back. But just a simple thing that we may require, we need to review, and if necessary, revise that, because these two are connected. We cannot have two groups dealing with the same subject but they are in contradiction with each other. They may require or may not at all. That is just a placeholder and nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carlos. And that is precisely why I suggest that the different subgroups look at what legal advice we have received already. And I think that this definition that has been provided to the human rights group in regard to applicable law could very well suit the needs of the jurisdiction group. Thank you very much, Kabus. So I will now turn back to my co-chair, Thomas, for the next agenda item. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. The next agenda item would be the first reading on the guidelines report. But as you will have noticed, we don't yet have Laurie on the call. Staff is trying to call out to Laurie, which is why I suggest we move to the HR discussion first and then go back once Laurie has joined. And if Laurie is not with us, then I can take over the job of briefly introducing the report. So,
I'm here. I'm sorry. My apologies. Hi. Yeah.
No worries, Laurie. Welcome.
Thank you. I had a meeting that ran extraordinarily late. I actually missed the RPM call, too. If you don't mind me shuffling just because I literally just got on the phone, I would appreciate that courtesy if that's okay. Just put me the next thing rather than right now.
Okay. Let's just do that. So I would suggest that we do HR then now, and then we go back to the guidelines. Report. Thanks very much, Laurie, and welcome to the call. And I guess that the next topic is for Leon to chair. It's for Leon to chair. So back over to you, Leon, please.
Thank you very much, Thomas. So the report on the human rights is due for a second reading. So I would like to handle the floor to Niels, who is the rapporteur for the human rights working group. So, Niels, could you please walk us through this second draft of your work and, of course, show us the way to the committee. Niels, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, co-chairs, and happy New Year's to all, and greetings from St. Petersburg. I would like to do the second reading now of the framework of interpretation, which we shared with you on December 4, and the link I have just shared with you to the plenary list. I understood from the co-chairs that it might not be necessary to completely read out the whole text, because that might take up a bit much of our spare time here, so I will paste the link to the PDF again here in the comments, and I see it's on screen as well, so I'd be very happy to hear comments on the document, and maybe we'll go through it part by part, so maybe we could start with the first part. Namely the framework of interpretation comment on within the scope of mission. Does anyone have a comment on that part? If not, and I don't see any hands, then I would like to move to the next part, which is the comment on the within the scope of other core values.
Niels, may I interrupt you? I see Kafu's hand is up.
Oh, Kafu's, please come in.
Neil, I am a one-hand person now. My second hand doesn't work. Whenever you have a reference to applicable law, I want to re-explain what I sent to the co-chair 3 days ago and to you, and what Rita did again to you, and what Tatiana did not get from my first intervention. But please allow me, when you reach that point, that I make my statement that I made it before. I thank you very much.
Excellent. I will do so, which is further down. So let me again invite people who have comments on the within the scope of other core values part. I see no hands. Then the part on respecting. No hands or comments. The part on internationally recognized human rights. And then we get to the part of as required by applicable law. So, Cavus, please come in.
Yes. Dear Neil, dear others, we have discussed applicable law in the human rights subgroup, and we have agreed to that, and I don't want to come back to that for that aspect. However, in the subgroup dealing with jurisdiction, we also have reference to applicable law and venue. There are two areas we have applicable law. One is human rights, the other is jurisdiction. What I suggest is the following. You introduce an asterisk on the applicable law in your report and add the following footnote, the text of which was sent to you before, but I could read it from my mind, is the following. Based on the conclusions and or activities of subgroup on jurisdiction, the definition of applicable law may require to be reviewed and, if necessary, to be revised. This is just a placeholder. I don't want to comment on your report. I fully agree with that. You spent considerable amount of time, and we have already congratulated you. So I don't want to disqualify that congratulation. But please kindly consider that CCWG has two groups. One is your group, the other is Greg groups, and these two have reference to applicable law. And we have to link them, and for the time being, we don't know the result of the Greg group. That is why I put this placeholder. I do not propose any change, and I do not propose anything on the GRECS because we have not yet reached there. But I just put this placeholder. I hope that is clear for everybody, and I hope this time Tatiana has already got what I have proposed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. On, I would like to refer to the CCWG co-chairs on this, on how potential conflicts between subgroups could be handled. So I think that's a bit outside of my mandate. So I look towards Thomas and Leon for advice on this.
Thank you very much, Neil. This is Leon Sanchez. If I may suggest, as I previously stated, we should look at the definition of applicable law that has been provided to the human rights group. And if that definition suits the needs, which should fit the needs of the jurisdiction group, of course, the same definition can be used for both groups. What I would try to avoid is to link the work of the two subgroups and subordinate any progress to a definition that has already been provided by our legal advisors. So what I would suggest is that we, of course, keep an eye on the evolution of the discussions in the human in the jurisdiction group, but we leave the report in human rights as is, as we have been provided a legal advice on what the definition of applicable law is. So instead of subordinating the human rights definition to that of the jurisdiction group, I would suggest we do it the other way around. Let's pull this definition to the jurisdiction group and try to work with that definition in the jurisdiction group.
That sounds very reasonable to me as well. I see Milton is next in the queue. Milton, please come in.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you very well.
Great. So I'm just reading the internationally recognized human rights and applicable law portions, and my understanding of this is that essentially ICANN has no obligation under this framework to respect any particular internationally recognized human right unless it is required by applicable law, which means essentially domestic national law in any given state. Is that correct, or am I misinterpreting it?
I would like to ask the some people of the drafting team from the human rights sub-team to respond to that. Greg, Tatiana?
Tatiana Trofina is speaking for the record. Well, I would. Can you hear me well?
We can hear you very well. Welcome, Tatiana.
Thank you very much. So, as it has already been pointed on the chat, human rights are not among obligations or commitments. They are among core values, which doesn't really create obligations for ICANN, and it has been balanced. So, to understand the meaning of applicable law and what let's call it obligations of ICANN are, we have to look at the definition of applicable law together with our reference and explanation for core values and how it is reflected by the bylaw. So for me, it's not binary. It's not like if there is no obligation in the applicable law, ICANN has no human rights obligations. It's core values. So what actually this means, at least for me, and I believe we discussed this in the group, is that in the policy-making process, and this is our main aim for this framework of interpretation, ICANN has to take into account human rights as one of the core values and balance, do kind of balancing tests with other values, and then also look at applicable law. So this is my understanding. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Tatiana. Milton, does that answer your question? Milton, might it be that you are on mute? I do not hear Milton.
Can you hear me?
We hear you now, Milton. Oh, that's a relief.
Okay.
Please come in.
Okay, so people are very concerned about whether this creates obligations that go beyond the limits of ICANN's mission, but what if respecting a human right is within ICANN's mission? Is ICANN bound by that obligation to respect the right? And can it be challenged, for example, in an IRP if it does not respect a human right that is within its mission? So just as an example, we have within our mission a very clear statement that ICANN shall not engage in content regulation. If ICANN does something that challenges that borders on or does content regulation, can this human rights core value be used as part of the arguments for stopping it from doing that, or is it just purely a mission interpretation?
I would like to invite someone from the drafting team again to respond to that, or someone else from the subgroup.
Oh, this is Greg Schott, and I can jump in and try. I think, the mission and the core values are two different things. Mission, ICANN must follow each of the elements of the mission. The core values need to be balanced against each other, and each need to be followed to the greatest extent possible, but the balancing act may mean that some are followed more closely than others at a given time, and then in a different time the balance will be different on a case-by-case basis. How that relates to any area of the mission, and accepting purely for the point of the argument that content regulation and human rights are opposed to each other in some fashion. If ICANN were to engage in something that violated human rights, which in this case does mean something that violates applicable law that applies to ICANN, whether or not that's a core value, ICANN can't violate applicable law. If it doesn't violate applicable law, then frankly it's not within the scope of the human rights bylaw. Although ICANN can always take and other human rights standards and guidelines into account as it wishes. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg, for that elaborate response. I think Tatiana and Greg made it really clear. I think there is a very clear limitation on the expansion of ICANN's bylaws. There is a very clear guiding principle of the core value. So I hope that this is explained now, Milton. Like to go next into the queue because we're quickly burning through our time. And I see the next one in the queue is Cavus. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, I would meet your requirements. I have two different points. One point is the suggestion of Leon and the suggestion of David to the question that I raised. I am happy with both of them. And I don't want to waste the time of the meetings and so on and so forth. So if the proposal of David is accepted, and if the solution proposed by Leon is also taken, I have no problem with the reference to applicable law. But once again, two subgroup work should be coherent and consistent. Now, on the second point, and reply to Milton, I think Greg has very eloquently explain the situations. There is a difference between the mission and the core value. One is almost mandatory, the other is depending on situation, and there is a balance to be made between the two, and this was raised at the work stream one, and we spent a lot of time, so I think that with respect to the reply given by Greg, we may not have any difficulty and any problem. I hope Milton would accept this solution or this explanation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. That's very clear. I think we also accept the guidance by Leon, and I see Leon is later in the queue, so I think he'll be pleased with that. I see Greg is next in the queue. Greg, please come in. Oh, that might be an old hand. So, Leon, please come in.
Thank you very much, Neil. Just to continue my suggestion, which I heard has been accepted. So I would recommend that we continue the second reading and that we go to public comment and gather feedback on this issue that has been acknowledged that is still an open item. So could we please follow up and continue with the discussion?
Yes, thank you very much, Leon. So let's now continue to the last two parts. So let's continue to comments on the core value does not create and shall not be interpreted to create any obligation on ICANN outside its mission or beyond obligations found in applicable law. I see no comments on that, except for a hand for Leon, but I think that's an old hand.
It is an old hand.
So I go to the last part. And this core value does not obligate ICANN to enforce its human rights obligations or the human rights obligations of other parties against other parties. I see Brett's hand is up. Brett, please come in.
This is a question related to the previous point about applicable law. And I'm sorry if this has been resolved earlier. I haven't been attending all of the calls lately. My question is, how do you resolve a situation where in applicable law may be in conflict on the subject matter at hand? ICANN is present in multiple countries, and it is also dealing with individuals and companies who deal with it that are from multiple countries with multiple laws. How is that going to be resolved going forward? I'm not trying to say that this needs to be resolved in this document, but I am curious to know if that has been discussed in the group, and if so, what was the conclusion there? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brett. This was indeed discussed, and I think it's even referred to in the part of as required by applicable law. But I will ask people from our subgroup to respond to that because, of course, I do not want
Neil,
to speak on.
May I please jump in?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Niels. This is Leon. I think that this is something that has been discussed in the group, but I would definitely encourage Brett to take this question offline since we are running really, really late on the call. So, and I think that this has been, as I said, widely discussed in the subgroup. So would you mind, Brett, if we took this offline and continue with the discussion on the second reading?
I'm happy to, Leon. If somebody has that information readily available, I'd appreciate it being forwarded to me, and I'll leave the question there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Brett. So let's continue to move on in the second reading for document news. You're back.
That concludes the second reading for me.
Okay. So we have a second reading, and I would now like to call for any objections to have these documents published for public comment. Okay, seeing none objections, I would kindly ask staff to prepare this document for being published for public comment, and of course notify the group when that has been done. So our next agenda item is also related to the human rights group. And there have been some questions sent to the general mailing list in regard to the scope issue. I think that there are five options that have been posed to the group to discuss. And in a nutshell, the discussion is that the annexes of our report, concretely Annex 6 and 12, approach the drafting of a framework of interpretation in two different ways. And the subgroup is asking for guidance on whether we should consider that the framework of interpretation and, of course, the intent of both annexes 6 and 12 has been met by the work that they have done so far, or whether they should be looking a little bit deeper into each of the bullets that are that are stated in annex in annex 6. So they posed some questions to the list, and I think that this is something that we as coaches would like to consider and come back to the plenary, of course, with a suggestion on how to proceed in regard to the scope of the human rights subgroup work. So I see Caboose hand is up. I'm not sure if that's a new hand or an old hand, Caboose. So if that is a new hand, please do take the floor.
New hand? Yes, I fully agree with you that the group could be engaged in the preliminary discussion. If they resolve the problem so far, so good. If there is a different view and they need advice on the CTWD, plenary they will bring it back to you at your next or subsequent meeting at a later stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. So are there any objections for us as coaches to consider these questions that have been posed to the list and come back to the group with a suggestion? Okay, Niels, would you be okay with us proceeding in the way suggested?
Yes, I'm greatly looking forward to any advice from the co-chairs, but also keeping in mind that we only have a couple of working weeks before Copenhagen, it would be great to get that input from the co-chairs sooner than later, so we can really ensure that we have all our work out at least the first part before Copenhagen.
Excellent, Niels. We will come back to you as soon as possible. We will discuss this amongst the coaches and come back to you in as short as possible. So I would like to now turn to my co-chair, Matthew, for the next agenda item, which is the jurisdiction subgroup. So, Matthew.
May I suggest we go to Rory first and catch up with our agenda with the guideline for good faith. So I'm handing over to Thomas. I'm not trying to escape anything here, but
great. Thanks very much, Mathieu and Leon. And let's now move to Rory to give us a brief overview of the report, which by itself is only 6 pages long, so it's not too long. So Laurie, I would suggest that you just show us through the structure of the report very briefly, and then I will take back over and manage the queue should there be any questions or comments from the group. And ideally, we would conclude this this first reading in the affirmative so that we can schedule the second reading for a subsequent call. Just for the sake of those who are just on the audio line and not in the Adobe room, there has been some comment in the chat section where Alan and I think it was Robin voiced their understanding that this would just be for the information of the plenary and not a first reading, but in fact the first reading has been announced with the agenda that has been circulated by Bernie prior to this call. So my suggestion would be that if there are any remaining concerns, which hopefully there won't be, that we resolve those between the first and the second reading in case the document is good to go for the rest of the plenary. So, Laurie, without any further ado, I'd like to hand over to you to show us through this report from the guidelines subteam.
Thank you so much. It is short and sweet. We tried to keep this as straightforward as possible because the actual underlying issue could in fact be quite complicated. But we felt for the ease of understanding throughout the community and for creating guidelines that made sense, that we would conduct our analysis and recommendations as we have. I would like to clarify some of our thinking up front based on questions and comments that I received after our briefing in Hyderabad. First of all, I would like to reiterate what this indemnity is really about. This is not about indemnifying or protecting board members from actions that may result from their behavior. It's quite the opposite. It is about protecting members of the community who may bring board removal actions forward. However, in order for this protection to trigger, to be valid, it has to be done in what is called good faith. Well, what does good faith mean? Well, basically, good faith could mean anything that we deem good faith, but there could also be standards in American law that require a certain minimal level of behavior to qualify as good faith. So on the part of good faith could be what anything the community decides, that's where we fell down and proposed the guidelines as you will see on page 3. However, just to make sure that we do not run afoul of any minimum standard that may be required under U.S. California law, we do have ICANN Legal reviewing the proposed guidelines as well in case there is some red flag that we haven't seen so that we can fix this early and before we do the final draft. I'm hoping to hear from ICANN Legal soon. They have acknowledged receipt and that they are reviewing the document. Secondly, I'd like to explain the challenge we had with drafting. Although this document is brief, it is thoroughly considered because we had to resolve two tensions. The first one is how do we encourage good conduct from the community and not discourage participation in the process? If we set up very strict guidelines with a lot of process, it might discourage people from coming forward. But at the same time, we want people to behave in a certain way, to be truthful in their allegations, to be professional. And even if they're not allegations, if this is the we can remove you for any reason and we're done kind of reason, how does that work? So that is a problem from a drafting perspective. Secondly, being very mindful and very open to the comments that we did receive in Hyderabad, we certainly don't want to create cause for removal of a board member by creating expectations of board members when, in fact, the community has flat out said we can remove board members for any reason. So these two tensions were what we discussed mostly on our calls, and I do believe that we resolved to a level that would be acceptable to the community. I'm also very interested in hearing feedback on our standalone recommendations. So we have our proposed guidelines, which was our task. However, in discussing our task, we realized that there were two other areas where it may be really helpful to have some process and some guidance for the communities, and those come in the form of these standalone recommendations. And I am very interested, particularly on this initial read, of hearing whether you think that would be appropriate in the report, whether you think we should leave that for another time, or, you know, perhaps we pose these as questions rather than recommendations. And I'm happy now to open I did report in Hyderabad, but to remind you that we're really looking for umbrella guidelines that are minimalist and very easy to follow. And I'm certainly open to answer any questions. But I also want to give a big thank you to Alan Greenberg and Cheryl Langdon Orr, who really helped and contributed so much to the discussions, as well as Bernie. They really helped get us far along in the process. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Laurie. Before we open it up for substantive comments on the report, let me just briefly respond to a comment that has been made in the chat. I think it was Alan who said that he has an issue with staff overruling what the sub-team has decided, i.e. that this document should only be for informative purposes of the plenary. This is not correct insofar as the agenda for this meeting has been discussed during a prep call with all the rapporteurs yesterday, and the agenda has certainly been sent out technically by Bernie, but it has been authorized and signed off by the co-chair. So if there's anyone to blame for this having been tagged to first reading, then it's no one else than the co-chair. So let me just make this perfectly clear. Should there be any difficulties with the document, I think those difficulties should be voiced in the substantive discussion that we're now going to have on this document. So let me please open up the queue for this discussion. We will discuss a little bit later during this call how we best organize our work towards our face-to-face meeting and beyond. And it was our collaborative thinking that this document should be put out for public comment as soon as possible. So let's just see how we can best achieve this hopefully common goal, and let's open it up for comments from you. So are there any comments on this document?
Hi, it's Lori. I have a question, actually, about what you just said. I'm looking in the chat. I don't understand what the conflict is. I apologize. Is it about our report specifically, or generally about the?
Lori, this is actually about this very report. Alan has made the point that the sub-team did not submit this paper to the co-chairs or to the plenary for first reading, but just for information purposes.
Yeah, that is true. That's true, and then I was advised that we would like the first reading. So I guess that goes to the blame the sub-chairs rule. I'm sorry.
So the blame is already with the, you know, the blame, if any, is already with the co-chairs, so there's no need to pass it on in circles. But let's hear Alan, who has raised his hand.
Thank you. I'm not particularly interested in putting blame on anyone. The document as is presented here has some minor changes. I don't know exactly what the changes are from the last one the subgroup reviewed. It's probably pretty good. But since we didn't have a chance, since Lori was on a very tight schedule and didn't have a chance to revise it and pass it by us, we decided that this would be for information only. We would do a first reading at the next meeting and the second reading at probably in Copenhagen. That's certainly what was discussed in the working group.
Thanks very much, Ellen. Sorry, haven't you finished?
I am finished.
Okay, thank you. Now, this might be a little bit of a stretch for everyone, but procedurally, there's no such thing as a 0.5 reading or a zero reading or whatever we might call it. We do have the issue that we are behind schedule with the finalization of several work pieces that the CCWG was meant to produce by mid-year, and therefore we need to try to be as efficient with the upcoming meetings as we possibly can. So while this is certainly in no way meant to truncate the group's wishes to chime in on the document, my proposal would be that we keep this as first reading, unless there's violent opposition. And since, Ellen, you've mentioned that the document is probably in very good shape and that there are only minor changes, can't we agree that the minor changes that might need to be done to the document are done between this meeting and the next meeting so that we can have the second reading soon to be able to put the document out for public comment prior to Copenhagen, and not only do the first reading or the second reading in Copenhagen, because that would definitely push the public comment period beyond Copenhagen, which in terms of work planning would be unfortunate. There's a queue forming, so let's hear Caboose first and then move back to Alan.
Yes, Thomas, I don't think it helps whether we blame each OI or including culture. From the discussion, I understand that we take it as something which we have discussed, and we don't call them first reading and we continue the discussion. Thank you.
Caboose, can you please repeat the last sentence for me with your conclusion, because I had a hard time understanding you from an audio point of view. The line was not very good. Okay, so obviously Caboose did not hear my question. Let's move to Alan now. Alan, please.
In the chat, the chair of the subgroup has said she doesn't consider this ready until we get legal opinion. You said that it's okay if we make minor changes between the first and second reading. Whether they'll be minor or not will depend on how we look at it. Sure, we can call this a first reading and then rewrite it completely from scratch for the second reading if you wish. I doubt if that's going to happen, but that is within our rights, since the subgroup has not seen this version that you're asking to pass first reading in this group. Thank you. I will not comment again.
Thanks very much, Alan. And Caboose, you've asked me to repeat my question. My question for you was to repeat the last sentence of your intervention, because the audio quality was very poor for me.
Yes, my last intervention was that we take it as a helpful discussion and we don't take it as a first reading. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. That's very helpful. We're discussing procedural issues quite a bit. I have not seen any comment on the substance of the paper so far. Does the group have any views on the paper itself? I don't see any hands, so no comments on the substance of the document. Okay, now, I think we should move on with our agenda. Since Laurie has withdrawn the document basically from eligibility for first reading, that leaves no room for us to proceed with this. So we will declare this attempt of a first reading as failed, basically. Nonetheless, we would be interested in hearing your views on the document, and as far as the legal review is concerned, let me just remind everyone that in Workstream 1, there were multiple occasions where this group did readings of documents, and we got our work products legally assessed afterwards. You know, so basically, our group needs to form a view on what its requirements, what its wishes are in terms of policy making or other areas, and then there is a legal check. So the fact that the legal review has not yet been done or not yet been completed would not necessarily keep this group away from conducting a first reading. But with that, I think we can move on. There don't seem to be any substantive comments on this document, so we can now move back to Mathieu for the next agenda item.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Mathieu Vaillé speaking, and we're coming to our item on jurisdiction. The topic at hand is a follow-up from our previous meeting, where it was last year, but we had a first discussion on a draft questionnaire, which has been refined by the subgroup since then. And the question that's being raised to the plenary today is based on the feedback that we're going to receive from Greg Chatton, the rapporteur, whether we can proceed with issuing this questionnaire publicly. So, Greg, over to you for a quick introduction. I don't think we're going to read the questions, but maybe just initiate if there's any concern with us proceeding on this, the conversation. So, Greg, for an introduction.
Sure. Thank you. It's Greg Chatton, for the record. Over the last several weeks, we have been working on and refining this questionnaire, which has been before the plenary once before. This version has some changes from the prior version, I also circulated a red line version, but just, you know, the essential concept here was to get some outside inputs for the can you still hear me? Hello?
Oh. Yes, I can hear you, Greg.
Okay, thank you. Something
okay,
sounded odd on the phone there. So the essential concept of the questionnaire is to get some outside inputs from beyond the information knowledge of the of those in the working group that will provide an input, an additional source of knowledge and information for the working group. This does not absolve the working group of need to do its own work. It's merely an additional feature of our work. And I don't know if – I think the SOAC accountability group also did a questionnaire. I don't know if any of the other subgroups have done this sort of additional kind of fact-finding. In any case, the changes from the last time are that the preamble has been shortened, and initially more specific references to the subgroups work assignments were taken out and are now just referenced to the bylaw and the accountability final report. The specific sections are footnoted. So the hope was to make the preamble shorter and a bit easier to get through and still allow people to dig deeper into what is meant by jurisdiction and the mandate of the group. The first question did not change too much from the last time around. There was discussion both in this group and in the subgroup of the fact that DNS can mean different things to different people and maybe inaccurately to some of those people. But in any case, we changed DNS to domain name related services in question one. Question two did not change at all. and neither did question three. Question four is actually a new version. There was a prior question four that was mentioned the first time around, but it did not have it did not gain consensus support in the subgroup. Essentially, was a divergence with regard to whether or not it should be included. So we have been working on question four, and after considerable work, finally came to consensus on the version of question four you see before you. And that really kind of takes us, that's at least a high-level view. So I'll open the floor. I don't know if Lori's hand is a new hand.
I take the moderation, Greg, no worries.
Okay.
So it's a new hand, so Lori. No, it's not. So Caruso is first in line.
Yes, I apologize to Michael if the quality of the sound is not good. Do you hear me, please, now?
Yes, you sound better than before.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would like to make a statement with regard to the work that Greg has done. We have had 18 meetings. About six or seven of that, or maybe eight, was around this questionnaires. We went back and forth. Accusations, allegations, attack, dispute, and so on and so forth. But I think it is a friendly issue between the families. I don't take it serious. Distinguished chairs, co-chairs, this is the best that we could get. It is not perfect. It is far from perfect, but that is that. If you try to open the discussion, you need another 7 or 8 hours, and it is outside the patience of this group. Phil Corwin put something today that irrespective of questions, nothing prevents the respondent to raise any issue in relation with the substance of the question, but not the wording of the question. Moreover, we are not writing the Constitution nor any charter. It is the questions, and it is what we could do at this time. It is a delicate balance. Everybody may be equally unhappy. Let us take it. I propose to the co-chairs to kindly ask the people if they could agree with this very delicate issue or balance that we have. If you open that, we come back to the issue whether we need to have question four or not, and that is quite dangerous and counterproductive. Whether the co-chair, you listen to me or not, but is the experience that I have since many, many, many years. It is impossible to get anything better than this. And I don't want to go to the definition of consensus. What is the rough consensus? What is the soft consensus? And what is the full consensus? That is what we have. And that is that. And I suggest take it and go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caruso. As usual, your experience in that is invaluable to us co-chairs. I will turn to Christopher in a minute, but indeed, I think the idea here is to test whether there is any objection to us moving forward. And when I say objection, it's basically we all know that we come from places where we would have some enhancements to proceed, but it's probably the best compromise. So the test that we are asking is really the die-in-the-ditch test that we've used several times. So the question is not whether there's a small improvement that could be made because it's been worked and worked and worked again at. But rather, if anyone has a very strong feeling against issuing this questionnaire. And while you prepare your green ticks and so on for that, Christopher.
Hi, good evening. Thank you, Mathieu. This is not to object. I wish to express my strong support for Kavrous's advice. I have personally participated in much of the discussion that subgroup has conducted. I know very well what the issues are, and I shall not entertain this meeting with an exegesis. I think Kavrous has put it very well indeed. Personally, I helped with the drafting with Milton, and I think I'm responsible for the addition of one word to this text, which has survived throughout the debate. But I recommend that the co-chairs accept this text and we move on.
Thank you very much, Christopher. Is there anyone in this call objecting to moving on with the questionnaire? So if it's the case, you can either raise your hand or mark a red cross in the AC room. I am seeing none. And so I think we will be in a position where we can now, we have now agreed that we will publish the questionnaire. And I'd like to congratulate Greg Chatton for his persistence, his determination, and keeping an open mind all through the pretty tricky discussions that took place in the last, I think, seven meetings around this questionnaire. And our thanks and appreciation as well to everyone who offered compromise in the last stretch around, and that enabled us to reach this point of compromise on one of our key topics for Workstream 2, where we are expected to demonstrate the benefits of the multi-stakeholder model. So thanks, everyone. And this is just a first step, obviously, and we are aware of the important task that is ahead of us, which will be then to process the answers with the same spirit of compromise and open mind. So thank you very much. This is an important step, and we move on to Liam for the transparency item.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. This is Leon Sanchez, and we are going to have the second reading on the transparency group's document. And for that, I would like to call either Chris or Michael to walk us through the small changes that have been made to the document since its first reading. And I will, of course, appreciate if either Michael or Chris could walk us through these changes. So I think that Michael is going to lead on this. So, Michael, you have the floor.
Yeah, thanks very much for that. So we discussed this draft, I think, at a meeting in either in November or December. And the changes since that point have been relatively minor. So just to flag a few issues that people might want to take note of. One is that it was discussed at the subgroup level that it would be good to get feedback from ICANN staff, which we expect to get sort of throughout this process, particularly around exceptions to security and stability and whether the revisions of the exceptions have been properly structured, whether any interests are missing. So we do have references in there now saying that, we're open to discussion on this with staff and look forward to any feedback, which we expect to happen sort of throughout the process of taking this forward and throughout the comment period. There's also some discussions about how staff might react towards mentions of resources that might be required or that the revised recommendations might need as in addition to prioritization. So that I'm sure that we're going to get feedback on that, but that's we've just to address that explicitly, we've included a specific reference saying that we look forward to discussing things further. There's been a bit of a discussion at the subgroup level on the role of the ombudsman. We currently recommend that the ombudsman engage in reasonable monitoring and evaluation measures over the DIDP system. That includes how many requests are received quarterly, you know, timelines for response, that sort of thing. Reasonable requirements to track how the system is working generally. And we also have a role for the ombudsman whereby DIDP requests that are to be that the staff wants to dismiss because they are frivolous and vexatious. So that's an exception that currently exists within the DIDP that allows for the dismissal of vexatious requests or frivolous requests. We've kept that in, but we've recommended that the ombudsman have to consent to dismissal on those grounds, which is in line with what you see in some national systems where they'll require an information commissioner to consent to those kinds of dismissals. We've included some soft recommendations on open contracting. There was a lot of discussion about this at the subgroup. We ended up including a recommendation that all contracts above $5,000 should be automatically disclosed going forward, and that going forward, NDAs should be limited, should only be signed on contracts where the information touches on a listed exception. Although that wouldn't apply retroactively, that's a recommendation going forward. We included some recommendations on the board removing material. So currently the board can just remove material from the published minutes of their meetings based on a vote. And we wanted to restrict that to material which would fall foul of one of the exceptions listed in the DIDP, basically to have rules around what information can be withheld by the board. And to have classifications, decisions by the board to withhold that information time-tested. So rather than the board in their published minutes saying this information just won't be published, they would say, well, this won't be published for 6 months or a year or a month or whatever is necessary. More broadly, and again, these haven't really changed, but it's a bit probably useful to just go over some of the recommendations more generally. We include clearer procedures for responding to DIDB requests. That includes centralizing the process and providing reasonable assistance to requesters. We some proposed revisions to the exceptions to sort of narrow them and ground them in real harms. We include procedures to contact third parties where information that they've provided is under request to consult on their opinions about whether or not it should be given out. And we recommend reviews of the DIDP every 5 years. So that covers the DIDP sections and the sections on transparency and board deliberations. And again, I guess you guys have the document in front of you, so hopefully you can check out the recommendations yourselves. Hopefully some of you already have. Chris, did you want to comment briefly on the report on the measures on transparency of interactions with governments?
Sure. This is Chris Wilson for the record. One of our recommendations pursuant to the CCWG's report was coming up with some transparency regarding ICANN's interactions with governments. You'll see on the recommendation itself is on page 21 and 22 of the report. And it basically, in essence, this is meant to, this disclosure, new sort of proactive disclosure requirement is meant to encompass engagement between ICANN and governments outside of what it was constitutes federal lobbying within the United States, and also outside of sort of the formal government ICANN interactions that take place, you know, during the ICANN meetings, ICANN policy development processes, et cetera. It's not meant to encompass those types of interactions. These are sort of additional ex parte discussions that may occur in any way, shape, or form outside sort of the traditional lobbying context, and certainly outside the traditional interactions that occur within the ICANN community. So, you know, we as you'll see in the recommendations, there's, you know, we recommend that, you know, certain disclosures occur at least yearly, but no more than quarterly, and the community can sort of determine what, you know, what's best in that regard, but certainly at least once a year. And again, you'll see bulleted lists of things that we think are worthy of disclosure. So, really, that's, you know, that's the context. I think I more importantly wanted to clarify that this doesn't intend to encompass government interactions, engagements, et cetera, with ICANN that occur within the ICANN policy processes, discussions, et cetera. This is ex parte outside of that. So hopefully that clarifies some things for folks.
Great. Thanks so much for that. And just to briefly mention that there's also a whistleblower protection section, which hasn't substantially changed really since Hyderabad, and it mostly just follows the mirrors the recommendations that NAVEX made in their own assessment, which we felt were pretty good. So with that being said, I would like to open it up and look forward to any commentary that people have on the document or its recommendations.
Thank you very much, Michael and Chris. I would like to congratulate the work, of course, the group for this excellent work that you've carried. And I see that Chris Wilkinson has his hand up. So, Chris, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much. I think this is an excellent report with addressing an important issue. In an earlier exchange with the subgroup, I made some points which I feel may not have been fully understood, and I would just like to tell two or three of them. The first is that, and I admit to having been a civil servant for more than 30 years, the first is that the document does not really recognize the costs to ICANN and to the community of implementing the detail that has been proposed. I think in a few points the detail goes too far, and above all, I would not want to put the ICANN staff in a position where they felt that their obligations for transparency in one point going as far as having to write a minute of every private discussion that they have or person-to-person discussion that they have, this goes too far, and it's not implementable, and and you don't want to paralyze an organization through transparency requirements which take too much time. This is not a qualification of the overall obligation of the institution per se to be transparent vis-a-vis the community, but a degree of proportionality is desirable, and above all, whatever you do, it will not work if you do not have trust. So I would recommend that the report be reviewed from the point of view of the cost of implementation. Regarding public procurement, open procurement, I agree and have advocated, and in some respects there's a paragraph on page 9 which could have been borrowed from one of my earlier submissions. But again, the report goes slightly too far. In addition to the desirability of open competitive procurement, which I believe actually already exists, the report implies that the bids of each tenderer should become available under transparency to all the competing bidders. I don't think that's realistic. And I very much doubt that legally or practically the ICANN staff would feel that they could go that far. this is the third paragraph on page 9. And finally, I'm grateful that the authors have recognized that the interactions between the members of the GAC and the board and members of the staff of ICANN are not assimilated to lobbying. But in the actual text, we still have the word beyond the formalized GAC interactions. I really think that the word formalized must be deleted. Most of the interactions between GAC members and ICANN are not formal. We have tried for 20 years, with some success finally, to encourage GAC members to participate fully in the multi-stakeholder machinery of ICANN's governance, and it would be a pity if each time a staff member or a board member talked to a GAC member over coffee or otherwise informally, that they felt that this interchange was subject to transparency rules and somebody somewhere would be writing a minute about it. That's not reasonable. So please, at the bottom of page 21, please delete the word formalized. Otherwise, I'm in full agreement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. I think that these comments are very valuable, of course, and they would be excellent in the public comment, because I think that, as we have previously done, the second reading is just a thumbs up or a thumbs down in order to publish the document for public comment. So I wouldn't like to, of course, go through words meetings on the fly for the document, and I don't think that would be the best use of everyone's time. So I would suggest that if we don't have any objections to publish this for public comment, we should definitely go forward and publish it for public comment. But first, I would like to handle the floor to Sebastian and then Cavus. So, Sebastian, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Leon. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. I know that we are at this reading, and I must apologize that the subgroup on the ICANN Ombuds Office were not really concentrated on the publication from other subgroup, as we were talking and working on the publication of the request for proposal for the outside review of the ICANN Ombuds Office. Nevertheless, when we met yesterday, we discussed the points where in the transparency document there are link with the Ombuds, and if we were not mistaken, there were two, one in the sub-team one about improving the DIDP, and the second, it's about the sub-team four about whistleblower protection. And we discuss the first issue about what could be the role of the Ombuds, and it creates some difficulties, and I am not sure that I will summarize in the right way, but from my understanding of the discussion yesterday, it seems that if the Ombuds is already in charge of studying one issue linked with this DIDP, it will be in a difficult position to be in the same time the one to consider if it's really abusive or vexatious. Therefore, we will have to work between the two subgroup in more detail about this specific issue. We wanted to have this discussion in 2 weeks when it's our next call. I understand that the wish is to have this published for comments. I am not as a rapporteur, if I may, opposed to that, but just you have to understand that the link between the subgroup need to be handled in I don't know which way, but it seems that we don't have the right timing or schedule to do the work in the two subgroup on that issue. And it must be a more broader issue about how to deal with items who are to be dealt by two or more subgroup. That's the current situation. Thank you very much for your understanding.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. So next on the queue, I have Caboose.
Yes, unfortunately, I was not able to join this group, but on the last proposal to delete the word formalize, I would request Michael to, if possible, very shortly to indicate how and why this formalized get into the text. I tend to almost agree with both people proposing the deletion of that, but I would like to hear before I join formally to these two why this formalized was there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Michael, you're next in the queue. Would you like to make any kind of reactions to what we just heard from the different commenters?
Yes, thanks so much for those for those comments. Just responding, so I responded in the comments already about the idea of open contracting and publishing competing bids, and say that that is routinely done in a lot of different jurisdictions. Regarding more broadly the inputs that we received from Chris, we did get your email, and we actually discussed that at the subgroup meeting that took place, I think either a day or 2 days later. And we specifically did discuss the resource issue. However, I think we might have misunderstood it because we discussed the resource issue with regard to resources to process and respond to requests and not specifically with regard to the duty to document. So that is an excellent point. In terms of our specific recommendation, the specific recommendation on the duty to document says not that every time two ICANN employees have a coffee together that they have to make a note of it and write it down in 2 minutes. That's absolutely not what it says. The specific wording is the DIDP should include a duty to document whereby ICANN staff are required to create and maintain full and accurate records in an accessible form so as to be able to be used for subsequent reference containing adequate and proper documentation of the office or authority's organization, functions, policies, decisions, and decision-making processes, procedures, and essential transactions. So that's not necessarily, I think that's a lower standard than what you're suggesting, and we also did take that language from regulations that are in place in different jurisdictions around the world. And so that's what it's based on. So from that perspective, we do consider it to be workable. I'm happy to discuss that issue further, but we want to maintain a situation where there's a proper paper trail underlying decisions, not necessarily that every time two people have a chat that they need to be writing everything down. Regarding the language of the word formalized, I have to pass that over to Chris. Because that's an area that he drafted.
Sure, this is Chris Wilson. So including formalized was I guess twofold. One, formalized interactions are between the GAC and ICANN for the most part, as best I can tell, and in my experience within ICANN, are publicly disclosed, right? We've got the communique, we've got perhaps letters between the board and the GAC, et cetera. So including making that, asking for additional disclosure seemed to be sort of redundant. Those types of interactions were already disclosed. I think and there's some discussion currently in the chat right now as to what to what extent the breadth of disclosure should be with regard to interactions, ICANN's interactions with governments. Not whether they should be disclosed, but to what extent the breadth of that disclosure should be. You know, I think the approach taken here is trying to strike that balance, as Christopher mentioned, between disclosing things that don't that are otherwise public, if you will, and not get in too much into the minutiae of each, in documenting every last coffee or casual hall conversation that may occur, but looking at sort of a broader broader strokes, and certainly focusing particular attention with ICANN's interactions with governments outside of policy discussions within ICANN, but outside of PDP working groups, for example, or other sort of quote unquote formalized work processes that occur within ICANN. So the term formalized was meant to sort of deal with sort of not sort of sweep in discussions that may occur between governments and ICANN on matters that are sort of are public policy matters within ICANN that are you know transparent discussions that occur all the time. Obviously, I don't think it's reasonable to sort of disclose every last casual conversation, like I said, in a hallway at an ICANN meeting, for example. But I think the broader focus here, I don't want to get wrapped around that axle. I think the broader focus and disclosure here is really about interactions with governments, et cetera, that occur outside of that context and are not disclosed, for example, within the federal lobbying disclosure. I think the broader disclosure focus is on those types of interactions, not focusing on the day-to-day, discussions that occur, between SOs, ACs, and the GAC and ICANN, et cetera. So, as to whether we should delete formalize, I think that's certainly something we can talk more about. I think it's worthy of further discussion, but hopefully that provides a little more clarity, or perhaps maybe it muddles it more, I don't know, but as to why that word is used. It's an attempt to sort of cabin, to some extent, the disclosure. So I know time is running short. Happy to talk about this offline as well for folks that want to do so, and certainly public comment period, we'll talk about this as well. But that's hopefully provides a little more insight. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chris and Michael. I see that Chris hand this up, but I would first like to suggest a way forward. We could, of course, have a look at each of the items that has been discussed that's open in this call on the mailing list. So we take this offline. And while we do this, I would suggest that both subgroups, the transparency and the ombudsman group, hold a joint meeting to iron out the details that seem to be outstanding. And my question now would be whether these would prevent us for publishing these documents for public comment. My impression is that we can go forward with publishing for public comment, but I would like to hear if there are any objections to publishing these documents for public comment. Okay, see the whole hands up.
I have some points.
Yes, Chris, and may I ask you to be extremely brief since we are running out of time?
Okay, thank you, Leon. I just want to come back on a couple of points. I made these points weeks ago in a memorandum to the subgroup. So I think that is already on the record. I think the discussion today should influence the document before it goes to public consultation. Otherwise, what are we doing here? Regarding the word formalized, I notice in the chat that there seems to be support for deleting the word formalized for the reasons that have been said. Regarding Michael's explanations, I'm sorry, this document does go into the minutiae. I would strongly recommend that the people who would have to implement it, notably the ICANN staff, should provide the subgroup with their comments before public consultation. Otherwise, there are elements here which unfriendly and unkind souls might regard as ridiculous. I don't regard them as ridiculous, but they go too far. It is not implementable as it stands, and if it goes forward, the bureaucracy of the ICANN staff would be spending far too much time on the minutiae, whereas you risk missing the point on the substantive issues of transparency. I rest my case. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris, for this comment. I am closing the queue with David McCauley, and I would please kindly ask Kavu, Sebastian, and David to be really brief. So, okay, Kavu, you have lowered your hand. And next on the queue, I have Sebastian. Okay, Sebastian, hand is down now.
No, it's not down. It's just because you give me the floor that I put it down. Yes. Sorry, Sebastian Bachel is speaking. Just to say, my only trouble, not just for this document, it's how we deal with issues who are in connection of two subgroup. And the current question about the ombuds is one of them. And I feel that if we, as a plenary, we can't put some ideas and changes as it's our duties, and it's go to comments, and the comments could be aligned with what we say or in opposition, but it's like we are not doing our full job. I understand that we are constrained with time, but I'm not sure that we can't spend one more week in finalizing that. It would be better, I think. But that's the call of the co-chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next on the queue, I have David McCauley.
Thank you, Leon. David McCauley here. And your comment, Leon, about ombudsman and transparency having a joint meeting is what's prompting my comment. And what that comment is I think we have another task for the plenary CCWG at some point, and that is to correlate the various subgroups. I'm worried that some are wading into the work of other groups, and I've mentioned it in the transparency group with respect to human rights. Our rapporteurs have done an incredible job, long, detailed work, and hats off to them for that. And this is a long legal brief with case sites and footnotes, the transparency document. Like any long document, there may be unintended consequences. And I just think we need to rationalize this. For instance, when in transparency we cite human rights documents and laws, et cetera, et cetera, at the end, the plenary may want to have some kind of an overriding document to all of our work, all the subgroups, saying, you know, human rights is dealt with in the human rights group, irrespective of other references, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm just noting we may have another task in front of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. So it appears to me that we are not ready to publish this document for public comment, of course, from what I'm hearing. So I would suggest that we continue the discussion of the open items offline, find a way to have a collaborative approach between the ombuds group and the transparency group on the issues that might have been overlapped, and of course try to not mix pears and apples, as David suggested, but just try to be collaborative amongst each of the subgroups. So I think this would be the conclusion. We are not going to publish this for public comment yet. We're not ready. And we'll continue the discussion on the open items offline and between the subgroups that might have overlapping issues. So our next agenda item is for my co-chair, Thomas. So I would go back to Thomas for the next agenda item. Thomas?
Thanks very much, Leon. And this next agenda item is about our planning. So we need to discuss as a group, and for full transparency, we've done some prep work on this with the rapporteurs during the preparation call, but we actually need to take a look at what is feasible and what we can deliver by when. You might recall that we have two buckets of sub-teams that we're looking at. One group that wants to be a little bit quicker, which is the second track, and one track that will take a little bit longer, which is the first track. And you can actually see this on the slide in front of you in the remote participation room. So we need to take a look at what is feasible, and we need to remind ourselves that we have budgeted both resources as well as money for the duration of this project, which is which was planned to be completed by ICANN 59. Now the question is this feasible? And I think we should all think very hard about how we can make this work as much as we can, because we do not have any guarantee that there will be additional funds beyond ICANN 59, funds meaning support in terms of staff, support in terms of travel support, support in terms of meeting support, in terms of telecommunication facilities, and legal advice as well. So we really need to, you know, make up our minds whether we want to issue basically a warning to the community that we need to go into overtime, that we need to issue a warning and a request for additional funds to the ICANN board and to the chartering organizations according to our budget rules, all of which has implications. You know, we do not know what the outcome of these deliberations will be. We have quite something to lose in terms of credibility with the community if we don't deliver as originally planned. So we started the exercise of going through the individual sub-teams with the rapporteurs yesterday. And from what's apparent from today's deliberations is that we will have delays with delivery and publication of some of the papers. And my suggestion would be that as time permits during this call, we will try to go through the individual sub-teams and come up with an overview of where we are, and then make a determination as to what the consequences of that will be in the next couple of days. I see Cavus's hand is raised, so Cavus, please.
Yes, Thomas, I agree with you from the viewpoint that beyond ICANN 59, there may not be any financial support. That is number one. But in order to see what is feasible and what is not feasible, it is not only the feasibility, it is the degree of flexibility and tolerance that the people indicate. And if somebody raised a question and everybody tried to attack to that, and there would be the counter statement, and we should be fired to, we should reduce this sort of the confrontation and go to the more positive and constructive, objective discussion, then we may make the thing visible. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz. I guess you're touching upon a very important point, and that is that we also need to think about our individual positions in this process. Mathieu has rightfully made reference to the die-in-the-ditch test, as we called it in Workstream 1. So this is not about finding the ideal solution or advocating for the ideal solution that each of us might be looking for, but we need to get back to the spirit of compromise and trying to find workable solutions that everyone can live with and that everyone might potentially suffer from equally. So I see Ellen's hand is up, so let's hear Ellen and then hopefully move through the individual topics to see where we stand. Ellen.
Thank you very much. I strongly support what you just said. We do have to get back to the concept of compromise. But with respect to budgets and when we complete, we did the budget for this working group, and as one of the chairs of the chartering organizations, I had to personally agree that, yes, we were taking a stab at what we were going to do and doing it in best faith. It's quite clear that some of our work groups, maybe all of them, underestimated the amount of work it would take. And that may simply be a bit of fallout. As much as I believe we want to and probably can finish by Johannesburg, we really have to take the time within the overall CCWG of looking at the final package we're talking about and making sure that as an overall package, it does make sense and we're not opening ourselves up to some unintended consequences, perhaps of the type we were talking about in the last discussion. So, yes, we want to try to do it on time. Yes, we're going to do our damnedest to make that target, but we also have a quality issue that we have to make sure does not get in the way of time. Thank you.
And I think, Ellen, that's what we tried to do from the very beginning of this this whole exercise. Certainly, there is time pressure. There are limitations of resources. We should try to do what's possible. We should not make quality suffer from constraints of whatever nature. But at the same time, you know, this Workstream 2 work that we're currently conducting is sort of a test phase of a new concept of community interaction with the board and staff. So we've been given our own resources. We've been given budget responsibility for what we're doing. And also we've sort of made a promise to the global community that we would come up with responses to the important Workstream 2 items soon. So we can't be seen to be putting this on the back burner. And also we must prove that we're efficient, because otherwise people might say, okay, this new working model does not work, and so let's move back to and give the community less responsibility than in this model phase. I see my dear fellow co-chair, Mathieu, has raised his hand. So please, Mathieu, over to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Sorry, I was a little bit long to unmute. Just a couple of additions from my point of view on where we stand. Basically, we started Workstream 2 in Helsinki in July. We are about 7 months into the process. And from what I'm perceiving, I think by the end of Copenhagen, our plan will have shifted by 2 ICANN meetings. Our initial plan, I mean. And so we will be in a position to report that in 9 months' time, our target delivery time has shifted by 9 months. And I think we also need to really look at what we're doing from the point of view of the topic of our workbook, which is accountability, and be clear with the chartering organizations about the fact that this shift is really significant, that we have no guarantee if we ask for an extra 6 months of funding that it's going to be closed by 6 months. And if our group says, we'll take whatever time it takes, then it needs to be clear, because it's a matter for the chartering organizations. I know it's a matter for a number of volunteers as well, who have organizations that support them and will not be supporting them forever participating in the group. So I think it's something, if we are serious about accountability, that we need to look very carefully about. And it's obviously, there's nothing that should prevail over the quality of our recommendations, over the absence of unintended consequences. But we need to also look at our own processes and the way we are organizing work and the resources we're putting in. And if we think we're not going to make it or not going to make it on everything, then we'd better, I'd rather inform the chartering organizations early rather than late. And we don't want to be the group that is perpetually asking for extra resources, because it would really be putting the multi-stakeholder model that we've tried to embody in many ways in a corner if we did that. So I would be in favor, and that's just the start of a discussion, of being very realistic about our timing. And if it means we say it's delayed by a year and a half, then we say it, and we discuss with the chartering organizations. But let's have this discussion in the next meeting, at least before Copenhagen. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mathieu. And I think you summed it up quite nicely. We need to be realistic. We have pushed back our initial timeline already quite significantly, and we can't do that or take that approach many more times. So in summary, you know, there are a lot of explanations why we are late, and I'm not saying, I think my co-chairs will agree with me, that there's no suggestion that this group has been lazy or that there are no good reasons for the delays that, that we've been facing. But the next revision of the time plan should actually be it, and it should be reliable, not to say accountable, to the community and the organization as well. So, you know, we've done a lot of comments now on this. We only have 5 minutes left, so due to longer discussions on earlier topics as well, I think it is not possible for us to go through all the sub-teams now and discuss how much more time we need, which is why we would like to ask the individual rapporteurs of sub-teams to provide us co-chairs with revised time plans for their delivery. And our hope is that we can get 1, 2, 3, 4 documents out for public comment before the upcoming ICANN meeting. Please do remember that there is no before or after the ICANN meeting solution only. So we can push things out for public comment in iteration, so that we, you know, that some public comment periods will run while we are in while we're together at ICANN 58. So let's try to be quickly with this as possible. Let's try to get some more energy to get things completed so that we can give the community the opportunity to chime in on these very important topics as soon as possible. And let's also try to get back more to the spirit of collaboration and consensus, and not try to squeeze the last bit that we want for ourselves out of this process, because that will actually make it fail. I see that Cavus's hand is up, and actually Cavus's intervention is going to be the last intervention from the floor today before we adjourn the meeting. Cavus, please.
Yes. We should not forget the fact that the more time you give to the people, the more discussion, the more debate, the more dispute and so on and so forth. This is my experience that we have been able in other organizations to do the same thing in shorter time. I don't want to say that close the door, but we don't want to open it for unlimited time and so on and so forth. Therefore, maybe it is early to talk about that. We should think that not to provide more room for more unnecessary and counterproductive debate. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz. So, with that, we should end this agenda item, and I don't want to move to AOB before having gone on the record with kudos and applause to all of those that have brought this work as far as we are. You know, certainly we haven't been as quick as we would have loved to. But this is not to take away from excellent work that has been done so far in many, many areas of our work. So kudos to all of you. And let me just ask whether there's any AOB that you want to bring up, bearing in mind that we only have roughly 100 seconds left on this call. So there doesn't seem to be any AOB, which is good because that actually allows us to end this call on time. I just hope that staff has taken note of the action item for rapporteurs to come up with revised time plans. So with that, I'd like to close this meeting. Thanks, everyone. Keep up the good work and talk to you soon. This meeting is closed. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.